If you're 60 years old today, there's a good chance you'll live to 100. Are you prepared? Welcome to Your Longest Life, the podcast all about exploring how we can live our best life as we age. Here's your host, Ian Thompson.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Ian Thompson, the Nine Most Downsizing Specialist and the host of the podcast, Your Longest Life, How to Live Your Best Life to 100. Now, I'm always researching online, trying to find interesting guests. And today I'm super excited to welcome Kristen Reed Edens with me. Kristen, good morning.
Good morning and thank you.
I should say good afternoon. I know you're in St. Louis, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And it is actually afternoon, but the way our days fly, it's hard to keep track.
It's COVID. We'll blame COVID. Everything seems all mixed up, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So I'm just going to talk about, Kristen, your background here. You were encouraged by your dad to write about your dreams at age 6. Well, how cool is that?
That's pretty cool.
And your writing expanded to include poetry, copywriting, editing, and blogging. A recovering goody-goody. A goody-goody. I'm sure there's a story there you might tell us about. Kristen got her first tattoo at age 49. There you go. Yes. Enjoys building a new life on her own terms. She writes for several outlets and her own blog at Grandparents in Business on family, health, retirement, money, and other issues for the sandwich generation. In her free time, she enjoys outdoors, gardening, cycling, quilting, etc. Welcome to the show today.
Thank you very much. I am excited to be here because what you do in your podcast and what you discuss is so important. And when I went through the whole downsizing and caregiving experience with my parents, none of what we're talking about existed. There was nobody talking about your topics. And so I had to wing it and make it up as I went. There was a lot of cussing and crying, Ian.
Oh, boy. Now, that's not even that long ago. Kristen, you mentioned 2009?
Well, 2009 was when a whole lot of changes began. For me, I quit my job because I was working as an exercise physiologist, and that economic recession was occurring, and I knew. I was on the way there. You got the whiff of it, you knew it, and I thought, all right, this was my move to quit the exercise physiology job and move into writing. But at the same time, I divorced, I moved across the country, and then immediately my dad fell in his house and suffered a paralysis and traumatic brain injury, which initiated the whole caregiving experience.
Now, this is not unusual, is it, that it's a crisis of some kind? Well, I mean, my wife and I might talk about downsizing. It's going to be great one day, boom.
Right.
And one day becomes right now.
Right. There is that vast difference. It either is, oh my gosh, we got to do it now. Or like you and your wife are, you're going, someday we will. And you make little infinitesimal motions towards that. But you don't have that, bam, now what do we do? And then everything hits you at once. That's what happened with us.
And this is also typical, I'm going to say, because your parents were not in the same town you were in.
No. No, it was a 1,000-mile round trip for me to get to where they are and to come back.
So were you doing that like once a week or?
Well, as needed, and it did easily become, it started out as often as possible. With me having my own business as a freelancer, I was able to go out and stay out there. So that was very convenient. But then I had my family here. And so that was the conflict. Yeah. But thank goodness for my freelancing and my own business, I was able to do that and realized for my own sanity. And that's something that caregivers and those helping families downsize is you've got to keep your own sanity intact. Is I told my mom that I can come maybe every 6 weeks because otherwise I was going to go batty.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about that. I'm sure you have more to say about keeping yourself grounded and not jumping into that same boat that's, you know, going off course over there. And
There were a lot of boats attempting to go off course. And at the same time, my dad fell in his house and he's in intensive care for months and months and months. I'm building a business. I'm recovering from divorce. And I had just moved across the country. So all of that leads to a very, very hair graying and wrinkle inducing mental health issue. And so I had to come up with ways to take care of myself, even though I had all these darts. I almost call them poisonous darts. Firing okay. at me. I had to deflect them in order to take care of myself first. So that's the thing that a lot of people think, oh, I'll get to that. But when you're a caregiver and you're suddenly thrust into caregiving for others, wow, caregiving for yourself and working your own job, whether it's for another company that's hired you or as your yeah. own independent business owner. That's just a lot to take on. And about that time at the other recession is a lot of that was going on because suddenly nobody had the money. Parents are still aging. We're right. still getting ill. The only fallback, the only reliable source is family and who can take care of what.
So were you doing like yoga and meditating? What kind of things were you actually...
Well, I happen to also have a degree in exercise physiology. So I do have a lot of exercise and wellness and nutrition yeah. background. So that's always critical to me. So yes, I did yoga. I found myself focusing more on hydration and drinking water and eating healthy and also exercise. That was one thing I never gave up on is the exercise that I tell people, if you don't let me go exercise, somebody's going to be murdered in their sleep.
I love your sense of humor. Get me out there. Darn it. Where's my running shoes? Or this isn't going to end well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it became more important. And another big thing I allowed myself is sleep. And I said, if I'm going to bed at 10, let me go to bed at 10. I don't care about movies. I don't care about friends. I don't care about, and let me get up when I have to. And there were times, Ian, I slept 11 to 12 hours.
Well, you're just done. You're just like.
You're just done. Just get me to bed.
Yeah.
Don't bother me. And it was very critical. And I found that if sleep was deprived, if my exercise or just stepping away from the phone and the screens and all the paperwork involved with downsizing and caregiving, if I didn't step outside, I could feel it start to pick at me. I called them little vultures, those little vultures. And when you start with caregiving and when you start with the downsizing process, there are so many factors. You're talking with medical professionals and banking professionals and attorneys and everybody, that there's nothing simple about it. One professional needs to at least get a piece of paper mm-hmm. from that professional, and then it takes time and phone trees are torture. No kidding, Ian, I would be trying to take care of my mother's or my dad's stuff by phone because then I don't have to travel anywhere, which is a waste of time. There were times, my hold times were over an hour.
Yeah. And that's hard to, if you're carrying on with your job, you're on hold. This is not to be taken lightly. Something to think about when you're talking about
exactly
downsizing.
And then when you're working full time and then you're on hold for an hour and 17 minutes and here comes a client call. What do I do? It's challenging.
Now, just a question, before your dad took his fall, did you ever have a discussion with them about downsizing and this is maybe something you should do? Or you did.
Yes, I did. And the ironic thing to that is about 6 months before my dad fell, I was visiting him. So my dad fell in December And no, yeah, I was visiting in October because that's the month of my mother's birthday. So it was October. And I was visiting and mom had probably already gone to bed. And dad was going up the stairs. And here's the kicker, Ian, is he was going up the stairs and fell. And I'm already, yeah, he was going up.
Okay.
He fell down the stair. Or no, let me reverse that. I apologize. He was coming downstairs and slipped. Just slipped the last and landed on his tail. But I looked at him because he and I had been talking about how mom goes up those stairs on her hands and feet, on hands and knees, because she's so afraid of falling. So when dad fell those or slipped those last two steps, I said, Dad, you know what? You and I were just talking about how we're afraid of mom falling down. You just slipped. So can we get a stair lift? Ian, he chewed me out and lectured me and gave me a really massive chewing for implying that he was old. Mm-hmm. And he says, why are you speaking to us like this? We are not that old and decrepit. Mind your own damn business. 2 months later, he fell down the stairs. I cried for about a week.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. That's a hard thing to share. Jeez. So
it still gets me choked up, but
of course it does.
It was a conversation that needed to be had. I introduced it and I didn't know quite how to pursue it.
Yeah. Where do you go from there? You bring it up. It's obviously not received the way you were hoping it was going to be. And then what? You just sort of don't talk about it anymore, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And then dad, 2 months later, was going up the stairs. I wasn't there. I got the call the following morning from mom, and that was it.
So from that, when I was researching online, you wrote the article, 7 Tips to Simplify the Process.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we jump into some of those, and I'll just read one to you, and you can sort of fill us in.
Okay.
First one was, start with goals. The goals. Of downsizing. You know, it's a huge undertaking. You talked about how much time do you need? Who's available to help? Things like that. Mm-hmm. That would be your first suggestion?
It would be. Looking back, now that unfortunately, I mean, it happens, both my parents have died. Dad died in 2015. Mom died in 2019. And even the aftermath was great, and maybe we'll get to it, maybe we'll not. But looking back, the goals are to talk with the parents. And even if you get a lot of anger and animosity and that, let them vent. Just let them vent, but go, all right, but mom, I've noticed this with you. Dad, I've noticed this with you. I know this blogger named Chris who experienced the same thing, and I don't want this to happen to you or to me, so let's work together. If you direct it as to the family as a whole, rather than just saying, Dad, I want you to da-da-da-da-da-da, let's work as a team. What do you see happening? Do you want to stay here? My parents' house was 3 floors and 2,400 square feet and on 2.5 acres. And
yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot. Mom didn't enjoy any of that, but dad certainly didn't. All of a sudden, dad's out of the picture. Maybe paint a scenario for him. What are you going to do if mom or dad suddenly becomes ill or suddenly gets injured? What's the plan? And I think, like you and I were talking previously, is that there's two ways downsizing can go. It's when you plan together with your spouse over a period of months or years, or bam, all of a sudden you find yourself needing to downsize. It's a lot easier to plan, and there's a lot of stress reduced and emergency reduced with that planning. With my parents, there was no planning. So there was a lot of avoidance, and it just causes more problems when you avoid.
I didn't ask you, do you have siblings?
Yes, I have 2 younger brothers. And so
maybe that's a loaded question, but I don't know if I want to go there. But what was that like now? There's a whole dynamic there you haven't mentioned. It maybe
is another dynamic. And over the years, now the interesting thing, my brothers and I were, all three of us were adopted different times, different families. So that was a whole different thing. And just as families go, I'm not saying that my family being adopted is more or less prone to this, but my brothers became angry at one another and wouldn't talk to each other and wouldn't have anything to do with the other. So, and then my middle brother became angry at mom when dad died. So he was still coping with dad's death and blamed it on mom and wouldn't do anything to help. And so that created a little friction.
Oh boy.
So I'm trying to balance, okay, how can I get brother one to help with this situation and get brother two to help with this situation when none of them want to be near each other? So that created some stress and some complexity and see the gray hair.
But you have your sense of humor. You see, I think that's probably what got you through it.
And a lot of chocolate.
Oh, chocolate and sense of humor, those two things. Okay.
there's different levels of it. So the problem is, and then again, I'm 500 miles away. My middle brother was just a 2-hour drive, but because of that situation, he was unwilling to help. Now I could go up to him and say, help me with these calls or whatever, but he just was not helpful. And then my other brother lived in Texas at the time and he was working and could not get off. So I was pretty much alone. Now, the other thing is my dad's siblings and my mother's siblings were willing to help. But even then, without them being a POA or something critical and legally required, they couldn't do much more other than listen to me cuss and cry, which was a tremendous help.
Okay, let's talk about that a little bit more. Did you have a POA for your parents?
Yes, and what was interesting is mom was dad's POA up until his death. And then she would not let me do anything with my father because it was none of my damn business. So I said, okay, but let me help. It's already obviously stressing you out. And so she would give me little tasks here and there, and I would see what was missing and I would take care of things as they came along.
Yep.
So when dad died, I said, mom, you need a POA. Let me do it. And she was very reluctant. She didn't want me getting into her business. She didn't want me knowing her health issues. She didn't want me knowing her financial status. It was none of my business as her oldest child. And I said, but mom, are you going to have your sister? Are you going to have dad's sister? Who's going to help you? You're going to need this stuff. Look at how much I've been helping you the last 6 years. You're going to need somebody. Do you want it to be me? Do you want it to be brother one? Do you want it to be brother two? And that's a part of the goal setting that you're talking about. You've got to get these things established and presented in such a way that they go, you know what? You're right. I don't want this to happen this way. A lot of things, Ian, that our parents are dealing with is extreme privacy. And a lot of them are recovering from all the loss and skim livings from the depression and the wars and the privacy issues and growing up with, don't talk about money. Don't talk about anything personal because anything like that is taboo. And I had to break a lot of those walls as soon as it came, it hit and it hit hard and suddenly.
Mm-hmm. Now, the next thing, one of the other things you wrote down in your article was who gets what? This is when we were talking about downsizing and everybody opens their garage. It's full of endless things from many, many years and schools and holidays and trips and stuff. How was that done? Or how did you navigate that?
Yeah, that was, so when shortly after Dad died, maybe about a couple more of Mom's friends died. And she would look at things and go, you know what, Kristen, this house is so big. I don't need half this crap. Help me. I said, great, great. I've been waiting for her to say this because me saying it, oh, you're invading my space, Kristen, go away. But when she said it, I said, great. And I said, let's start here. Let's start in these unused rooms. Let's start with things you don't use anymore, that you don't need anymore, and the things that are no longer useful to a single independent woman. And use those strong words, because this is a critical time for our elders. They don't want to lose control. They don't want to lose their seniority. They also don't want to lose their status. And this is such a delicate time that we have to be aware of that, or you're just going to keep hitting those blocks, those walls. So when Mom said, I'm ready, let's do this, I've just been waiting for those words. So I started, and she would sometimes go, okay, this and this and this. But it still took another 2 years to get
2 years?
2 years. I'm gonna share a quick story for her. My mother, her hobby was genealogy, and so she shared paper, and she made copies of everything. And then she saved every telephone book from every family member and every place we have met or lived, and we moved 10 times. Since 1972.
What?
I made the mistake of recycling them.
Oh dear.
She was taking a nap, and I thought, oh, hot damn. Boom, boom. I put them into a box, took them to recycling them, came back, and she went to make a phone call and noticed the telephone books were missing. What did you do? If I could have been grounded, I would have been grounded for eternity. But I told her I saved the cover of every one because it had those names and numbers. And
yeah,
well, it's a very, very difficult process. And she, up until her death, she never forgave me for that.
Oh, boy.
but.
So you want to help, but you have to be. What I'm hearing you say is you have to be cognizant to their feelings and
their fear.
Fear. Thank you. That's a good word, isn't it?
And their property. These are things collected over several decades. And my parents had been married 50 years.
Right.
So every piece has some sentimental value. And what it took was saying, Mom, what do you need to move downsize? So we had a two-phase downsize. She went through from the 2,400 square foot to about 1,000 foot apartment, and then to a similar apartment just a couple miles down the road. What do you have to have? And so we started thinking, well, I don't like to clean. All right, we'll get rid of all the cleaning stuff. Well, I don't like to do any yard work. Okay, we'll get rid of all, you don't need dead stuff. But what I found was helpful was she would say, well, maybe your brother would like this, or maybe your neighbors would like this. Oh, I caught on. I got this brilliant light bulb thinking, oh, okay, you know what, Mom? All of Dad's glass or all of Dad's clothing would be great for Uncle Rick, for instance. So how about right. I take all, terrible. This is terrible of me. But she, as long as she knew a family member was getting it, I bundled it up and took it off to Goodwill or a thrift shop or something. Never had to worry about that again. So some of it requires creatively finding ways to donate it. And another area that I found was helpful to convincing mom to let go of these things was women's shelters. She was rather open to having women's shelters take this, or talking to people at a historical society and saying, do you know anybody, nursing homes, for instance, that would like to have, oh, she had a baby grand piano. She wanted to take that. And I said, how about donating it? Or my brother actually suggested donating it to a nursing home. That was gone. So here's a good tip. Is find those areas that are significant to your elder, your parent, your grandparent, or whatever, that is meaningful for them. If they've got to give up a treasure, what is, so for my mother and her genealogy ties, the nursing home or a women's shelter seemed to be a good place for her things.
So get them on board. It's their idea.
Yeah. It's got to be their idea.
Right. And oftentimes it was difficult, I imagine, to try and sell anything. Did you find that people really didn't want to pay for the giant oak dining room suite or some variation of that?
Very, very frequently. My dad and his hobby was a glass blower. And so they had several of those big, large, Chinaware cabinet.
Yep.
And we're thinking, we got to be able to sell this. They paid big bucks for it.
Yeah.
$50. No. Oh my gosh. $50. If that, $25. And just the hassle of trying to find somebody willing to pay that kind of money. All right, just take it. Just take it. I think one of the display cabinets ended up going to another nursing facility. Oh, actually, okay. One went to a church. One went to their church that they belong to.
Mm-hmm.
So find those meaningful places. And again, like you said, make them feel like it's their idea.
So your mom eventually came around to, hey, this is a good idea, Kristen. Thank you for bringing this up. Let's get going. Did she sort of get on board with you? It was always a bit of a...
Always a bit of a back push.
And push. Okay.
And I don't think she ever thanked me.
Yeah, I'm sure she meant to. I'm sure she meant to.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm sure
but
she did.
But it's a lot to take on. So it's very difficult to. And I do not hold that against her. It's just it was hard for all of us.
Yeah. So you have some general advice to help parents downsize. I'm just going to go through these, and we can chat about them.
Okay.
Gentle, steady. Pressure is best. Getting angry or demanding will cause harm, tension, and slow progress.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You've got to keep on with the patience. And that's where the self-care comes in. Because if you're denying yourself time alone, me time, sleep, decent food, then your ability to maintain patience and understanding just fizzles fast. And so without self-care, it's going to slow things way down. You're just going to, it's going to splinter.
I imagine setting a deadline doesn't help either. Okay, let's get this done by the end of March.
Right. Because once Dad was placed in the nursing home in late 2009, I can remember Mom coming home and just breaking down. What am I going to do with this huge place? It's beyond I can handle. I said, all right, let's take this bit by bit. And let's start with what can we thin out first? What do you not need now? And this is all based on that. As we talked earlier, there's two ways downsizing can go. A nice slow plan or immediate here we go. I'm basing this all on the immediate here we go emergency. That's all I know. So take it a bit at a time. What do you want to accomplish now?
Even the immediate, when you say It was the immediate. Your dad was in a crisis and you got started on the downsizing process. Let's say you started on April 1st. Was it 6 months before you were done? Was it? Did it take a year?
That is a beautiful question, Ian. And at first, when mom realized that and she approached me with that, and I said, great, what's your plan? Well, I'm going to start with this, this, and this, and this. So I said, okay, how much time do you think it'll be? I'll be out again in mid-May. And which I think is pretty accurate because my birthday is in May and I'm going out there. But anyways, so I would call, we spoke daily anyways. And I'd say, not daily, because that's starting to pressure and put the stress on her. But once a week, I'd say, how are you doing on this room or getting rid of or clearing out? And again, be careful of the terminology used, mm-hmm. or thinning out mm-hmm. the paper from this or cleaning out this or whatever. And, well, I haven't made the progress I'd like. And so after about 3 or 4 months of that, zero had been made. And so I had to take another approach. Okay, she can't do it on her own, or she won't do it on her own. How can I help? How can I nudge this? Well, do you want a family friend to come help? Well, that might be nice. And I'll be there. Okay, I could come out there. But then that other outside person made her very uncomfortable. And that's something I talked about in my articles, is make sure that whoever you bring in to help assists in comforting your parent, your elder, whoever it is, rather than creates that another block. You just don't need any more blocks. You need somebody. And I found out my aunt even came, because my aunt lives here. My aunt offered to come out. And for some reason, that created a huge block.
Oh, no. Oh, really? No. Well, there's so much going on that we're not aware of emotionally, yeah. in the background, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years ago, what happened then? And I just never let go of it. We're all the same.
Yes.
Aren't we? There's always things back there that we're just not going to let go of. And then it comes back again. We're kind of poking it a bit, aren't we?
Yes, yes. Well, let's use I know your listeners cannot see what I see, but let's look at the photos on your shelf there. What if I said, Ian, you don't need those anymore. I'm going to grab them and take them out of here. What does that do to your insides?
Yeah.
It's going to make you go, I don't like you. Go away. And it's going to make you possess those things even harder. That umbilical cord becomes super toughened, and it's a difficult approach. And we all have those things we don't want to get rid of.
So as we wrap up, what's the one big takeaway for you? What's the one big? One of your friends is in a crisis. They phone you and say, "Geez, Kristen, what am I going to do? What are you going to say? What's the first thing you're going to say?"
I'm going to say, step outside and breathe. Just get yourself away from anything that reminds you of what just happened or what's going on. And get in touch with yourself and find out what you can or cannot handle, what you are willing to and willing not to handle. So what can you handle? What can't you handle? And what are you willing to handle? And then find solutions to all of those, and know that you're going to receive a lot of resistance.
That's excellent advice. So right away, the very first thing is to step back and think of yourself, even though you're initially going, gee, I want to jump in both feet, help mom or dad. Here we go. I'm all in. What you said is, let's just make sure that you're actually ready to do what you think you're ready. Maybe you're not. Maybe there's other things in your life that are going to prevent you from fulfilling the goal that you have.
Yes, yes. And it's going to be a massive goal. I was a caregiver since 2009. My mother died in 2019, but then I became the executor of her.
That's another whole thing, isn't it? Yeah.
It was just a mess. So caregiving does not quit upon a person's death. It, there's a whole new level.
Right. That's another whole podcast, isn't it? That's
it is. Oh, yes. That is another whole podcast. And I've got some do's and don'ts for that, too. So maybe we should.
Okay, we will do part two again. Well, yes. Kristen Edens, it's just been fantastic. And thank you very much. I know we've had a really good show today, and I appreciate you coming on. Where can people get in touch with you? Tell me more about, you know, your sandwich generation work and the writing that you do.
Well, I can easily be found at my website, which is kristenedens.com, and that's kristenedens.com. And I can be found on LinkedIn at Kristen Reed Edens, and that's REEDEDENS. And my website, or my blog called Managing Midlife, is on kristenedens.com. And I can be easily found at both sites.
Great. We have so many articles, excellent information. Thank you for joining me today, and have a great day, okay?
All right. Same to you, Ian, and all your wonderful listeners. Thank you
for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Your Longest Life with Ian Thompson. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe and share it with others. For more info, articles, and to get in touch with Ian, visit yourlongestlife.com.